Good morning. Thanks so much for joining us, Evan Bray. On a Thursday morning, I just poked my head in the newsroom, and everyone diligent on the phone. We've got people out in the field really working on trying to understand the magnitude of the wildfires, how impactful they are being in communities across the northern part of our province, and what efforts are going into helping them. So we will continue to keep you up to date on that on the program. And I mentioned earlier, Premier Scott Moe and the Saskatchewan Public Safety Agency are hosting a news conference at 1:30 today. I just found out we will be carrying that live. So at 1:30 today, we will have a live update from the SPSA. Premier Scott Moe will be there as well. No indication at this point if it becomes an actual state of emergency for our province. We know they did that. Our neighbors to the east of us, Manitoba, has done that. But 1:30 live, we'll carry that news conference and we'll be able to give you the update at that time. Well, I want to go back to the topic of this frustration that Western Canada is feeling with Eastern Canada. And it bubbles up. We've talked about this on the program quite a bit. This is not new. This has happened through the last number of decades where Western Canada boils to the point that it builds this frustration around how the West is disregarded, how the East is happy to accept our resources and everything we bring to Canada, but there is this feeling that we don't have the impact, the pull, the say that we should have when it comes to Ottawa. And I mean, in some ways, it manifests itself like we're seeing in Alberta right now with this movement around separation. To a lesser degree, that conversation has happening in Saskatchewan, but it's fairly slow. It's fairly quiet at this point. They've got, I think, 4,000 signatures on a petition. The other way to look at this is through electoral reform. And we've talked about this on the program a number of times. We've had guests on, political scientists, for example. When I saw an article on this, the person that spoke in the article was so well-versed in it, I said to Libby, my producer, we need to get Professor Roderick Wood on the show. He is with the University of Alberta. He's a law professor and has done a fair bit of work and understands how this works. He's got a broad range of legal expertise. He's written a handful of books. He served as a board member of the Alberta Law Reform Institute. And we're very happy to have Professor Roderick Wood from the University of Alberta joining us by phone this morning. Professor, thanks for taking the call.
Well, good morning, and thanks so much for having me on your show.
So, first past the post, where it's one of those things, this is how we vote. Lots of people don't really think much about it. It's just go to the polls, vote for the name that you want to win. But can you explain to us again, just give us a brief refresher, what is first past the post? And then maybe subsequent to that, what are some of the challenges with this method of voting?
Yeah, well, first past the post, it's the system that used in Great Britain, and we've inherited it here as well. And so you have a number of ridings, and the different parties put forward a candidate, and the one with the most votes wins that seat. So it's basically a winner-take-all system. So it doesn't matter whether you win by one vote or 10,000 votes, the result is the same. You win that seat. So one of the problems with that is it's disproportional. You can have results where the number of seats you get really have little relationship to the popular vote that you get. Now you ask Canadians, if you get 40% of the votes, how many seats should you get? The answer you usually get, well, they should get 40% of the seats. Or if you ask them, with the party with the highest popular vote, should they form the government? They'd say yes. But first past the post often fails to deliver on both of those fronts. What it does is it creates artificial majorities. You can often get a majority of the seats with much less than 50% of the popular vote. In Canada, it's often less than 40%. The record low was 38.5%. And in the United Kingdom, just recently in the 2024 election, the big shocker, Keir Starmer's Labour government got 62% of the seats with only one-third of the popular vote. That was like a historic low. So it's disproportional.
Mm-hmm.
It promotes regional divisions.
Right.
and creates a false impression that the political views of particular regions are monolithic. I mean, you can see that in the West, in Alberta and in Saskatchewan. You know, they're one Liberal out of 14 seats in Saskatchewan. Well, in fact, the Liberals got 27% of the votes, but only 7% of the seats. So, again, you see that lack of proportion.
Mm-hmm.
And by virtue of that, what it means is large portions of the country can have little or no representation in the governing party caucus or at the cabinet table. There's other bad effects. The attention of the parties are often focused on a smaller number of swing ridings, while, you know, safe ridings are ignored. And so in those ones, you know who's going to win. You can read the polls. You know who's going to win. You go out, you cast your vote, but you say, well, that's a wasted vote because it's had no effect on the outcome.
Right.
And then, you know, it can produce weak opposition parties, sometimes wiping them out completely. The classic case was Frank McKenna's government. It got 60% of the popular vote. It won all 100% of the 58 seats in the New Brunswick legislature. And so what you had would be Liberal backbenchers lobbing softball questions to Liberal cabinet ministers in question period. It was farcical.
Right.
So, you know, it can create really weak opposition parties, sometimes even wiping them out. It can produce strategic voting. I think your listeners many of them will have encountered this.
Of course.
You want to support Party A, but you vote for Party B in order to block Party C.
Right. And we saw that happen with the NDP, right, in this last federal election.
It happens a lot. Some say as much as 30% of the voting is strategic voting because of the first-past-the-post system. And finally, it promotes and fosters this kind of hyper-partisan, dog-eat-dog behavior of politicians. It's less so in systems that have proportional representation.
Mm-hmm.
It's more collegial. In fact, there was a political scientist after New Zealand had shifted from first-past-the-post to a proportional representation system. They looked at the speeches and analyzed them and found that, you know, they're less aggressive, less confrontational in the new system. It's more collegial.
Mm, very interesting.
You know, Canadians tend to hate this sort of, you know, this hyper-partisan style of politics that we have in Canada.
Sure. Professor Roderick Wood is my guest, University of Alberta law professor. So what are the alternatives? I know you talked about a couple in the article I read, single transferable vote and mixed member proportional vote. So can you talk about those quickly, Professor, and what that might look like? How might that impact things?
Yeah. Because those are the two that are really on the table. Both are proportional. And, you know, there's other kinds of proportional systems, list systems used in other countries. But these two are the ones that are being considered because they both have this strong element of geographical representation. Like, it's important to Canadians that they vote for their MP or their MLA, and they're from a particular geographic location, and they represent the voters in the House or in the legislature. And so that was really important. So we need to look at ones that have that element where you're voting for your MP or your MLA that will represent your location. So the two, as you said, that are the options are mixed member proportional, or MMP it's sometimes called. That's used in New Zealand and in Scotland and in Germany. And it's probably one that is closest to what we're used to in that the ballot looks rather similar to what we presently use, but with one big difference. If you look at the New Zealand ballot, it's got, you know, the candidates listed, and you choose one of them, just like we do under the current provincial and federal systems. But there's an additional vote. You vote for a party as well. And so your first vote elects your local MP, but your second vote will be the party vote, and this is used to allocate additional seats to a party. And these are sometimes called top-up seats. And this is what produces the proportional outcome. Mm. You know, 40% of the vote, 40% of the seats. You use these additional MPs to achieve that. And so what that means, though, is that you need additional MPs. So either the House or the legislature is going to have to expand in the number of seats, or you're going to have to increase the size of the ridings, or both. You'd have to make that decision to implement that. So you're voting for your local MPs, but you have these additional MPs that top up and make it proportional.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. that's the mixed member
proportional vote.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so New Zealand, Scotland, Germany have used that. Now, the other option is something called single transferable vote. Now, it's used in Ireland. It was also the system proposed by the BC Citizens Assembly for electoral reform. And by the way, 58% of the population voted in favor of that. But the threshold set by the government was 60%, so they just narrowly failed to achieve that really, really high threshold to implement it.
So that would have implemented it in their provincial election if passed? Okay.
Yeah. And so this one is a little more different from what we're used to, but it's actually a really clever system. It was invented by this English barrister, Thomas Hare, in the 1800s. It's used in Ireland and Malta, and interestingly, it was used in Alberta and in Manitoba for about 30 years, from the 20s to the 50s, in the urban area. So we actually have had some experience with it. Now, there's three differences. First of all, the ridings are bigger. And so, you take, about five ridings and combine them into a single district. And so, like BC, they actually did a map when they were proposing the single transferable vote, or STV. And they took Vancouver, which I think had 11 ridings, and said, okay, the two districts will be Vancouver East and Vancouver West. And so you have a bigger riding, but instead of voting just one member from that district, you vote for multiple, or you're going to be selecting multiple members. So one would be five and the other would be six in terms of the MLAs that are, selected from that district. And then the third difference, so bigger ridings, multiple members being selected. And the third element is that you rank. That instead of just putting your X beside one candidate, you rank them. Mm-hmm. One, two, three, first choice, second choice, third choice.
Right.
And then what happens is that, and this is the interesting and quite innovative aspect of it, is that the vote, if your candidate already has enough votes to gain a seat, the extra votes are transferred to the second choice.
Really?
Yeah, and that's why it's called a transferable vote. If you already have enough votes, your excess votes are given to your second choice. So see, that's the idea of no wasted vote. Every vote will count. And then if that's not enough, you knock off the lowest ranked person and redistribute their votes. So that's a way to operate. As I said, it's a little more difficult but it's different. It's different than what we're used to. But, it works fine in Ireland. And typically you'll find about 10 or 15 candidates running, and you rank them. You don't have to rank them all. You can just choose one or two or three. It's up to you. But you rank them, and then this vote counting goes on, in which the process I describe occurs. So what it means is that typically you won't sweep all five seats or all six seats.
Right.
It's going to be more proportional.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting concept. Our professor this morning is Professor Roderick Wood from the University of Alberta. We literally are up against the clock. We've only got about a minute and a half or so left. I still have a couple of questions, but one is, do we just not have an appetite for electoral reform? Is it going to be a political challenge to get that over the finish line? Because it was talked about in 2015 by soon-to-be Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, yet it never came to fruition. Do you think we will see it in the near future?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, because that is the problem, is that there's a strong push when everyone who looks into it says, okay, we want a proportional system, but then nothing happens. Why? Well, I think the reason is that the person who has the power to change was put into power by that system.
Right.
So they say, well, you know, I was put in power by the system, warts and all, so why should I change it? So that's what you're lacking, the political will to change. And, you know, despite the fact that it was a major campaign promise of Justin Trudeau, he, you know, ignored the parliamentary committee that recommended a proportional system, and you know, whether the storm, there was not that political will. So that's what the problem is. But I think, despite that, what will happen is first past the post will create more of these distortions, more of these anomalies, and people get fed up and say, "Now, finally, we want change." I mean, that's what happened in New Zealand.
Right. Before I let you go, 91 names on a ballot in one riding. Obviously, we know there was a reason behind that, sending a message. But is that a piece of electoral reform that could happen while we keep our current system? Because that seems like a crazy practice to have that many people running. It's clearly a form of protest.
Yeah, that was a protest. Maybe showing a bit of desperation, saying trying to create that momentum for electoral reform. I'm not sure how effective that was. It was a protest demonstration, really.
Do you think, though, and this has to be a quick answer, Professor, but will we be able to see legislative change to prevent that from happening under the current system we have?
Well, I suppose if it becomes widespread, yeah, because it does interfere with people trying to, exercise their franchise and vote. So if it becomes more routine, I think I wouldn't be surprised if some legislation is passed to deal with it.
Professor, appreciate your time this morning. Thank you very much for checking in.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Professor Roderick Wood, University of Alberta Law Professor, and a great explanation there on what electoral reform could look like and some of the challenges that come with that. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.